All right, y'all. Thank you for supporting Make That Radio Show platform podcast. I got to interview Paul, who is the founder of The Wall Printer. It is the only vertical printer sold by a U.S.-based company. They provide training, service, supplies, and unlimited support throughout the Western Hemisphere. It is a printer that prints vertically on the wall, regardless of the texture of the wall. I thought it was a fantastic concept. It was conceived overseas, and he brought it to the United States and to the Western Hemisphere. They also offer opportunities for future entrepreneurs and current entrepreneurs and contractors to enhance their skill set with this particular hardware. So check out the interview, and as always, support.
Radio show, man, they everywhere.
Alright, y'all, we're tuned in for another episode of Bank That Radio Show. I'm your host, Andres, and I have on Zoom with us again for another episode. We have Mr. Paul Barron, who is the CEO of the Wall Printer USA. I came across Mr. Barron's profile actually using, Podmatch, which is a great tool. So if anybody out there who's podcasting, hit me up and I'll send you the link to Podmatch and you'll be able to get more guests for your podcast. But Paul, can I call you Paul?
You're, of course, that's my name.
So Paul, reading your background story, the fact that this concept was already overseas and you brought it to America, I've seen the videos of how people can paint on the wall in a lot of different structures and textures and all that. What made you like really want to like bring that over? Because with it being, a new concept in this market, right, in the United States, how did you know that it's going to be like receptive?
So, Andreas, I'll try to answer that a couple of ways and probably have to go back a few years to give your audience some perspective on why I do what I do and what I'm doing today as a result of that. I firmly believe you are today because of where you were yesterday, whether that be good or bad, hopefully good. And in business, it's no different. You learn along the way and you learn what hats you like to wear and which ones you don't like to wear. Without going through, and by the way, I appreciate Andreas, the introduction and the opportunity to talk with you and your audience. Always happy to connect with people on LinkedIn and all that. But I'm not going to make this a sales pitch for my current company and products. Of course, if anybody is interested, they can go to thewallprinter.com and learn more about me and us and the products. But to answer your question, the journey that I've had, it was pretty much product and industry agnostic. And what I mean by that is I've had about 12 businesses that I've owned, and I've worked for about 12 different companies over the course of my 72 years. I know I only look 20, but I've got a couple of years.
Hey, you looking great for 72. I love it.
But I have a couple of years behind me and a couple of successes and a couple of learning experiences, which I call those things that maybe didn't go the way you want. And anybody who thinks that the path of entrepreneurship is a trajectory, that hockey stick that everybody dreams about, could not be further from the truth. Nobody starts off from zero and goes to 60 in 3 seconds without a lot of pain along the way and a lot of learning along the way. And there's a lot that accounts for that. and we can talk more about that as well, if you'd like. But again, not to go too far astray from your question, over the last 20 years or so, when I was first hired by a company that was actually a competitor of mine, I was working for a company in Atlanta, coincidentally, because I know you're in that area in Georgia, a company that was created by a bunch of Georgia Tech graduates that created a communications product. At the time, based on my businesses prior to that, I gained a reputation of being somewhat of a communications consultant on companies that were looking to adopt different technologies, whether it be telephone, audio, video, today, navigation, positioning, things like that, any kind of technologies that go into phones and communication devices, and computers as well. And that was about 23 years ago when I was hired by that company. I moved to Atlanta from Florida, which is where I lived at the time. Loved where I lived. It was up by a beautiful lake, Lake Lanier, just a little bit north of you, where you are. And it was nice. I did miss the coast, which is where I grew up and where I lived most of my life and have returned to now, being in Wilmington, North Carolina. But at the time, I was working for this company, helping them bring a product to market. They had just come out of production and development of this communications board that basically did call recording, kind of like when you go on to a service call or support call with a company and they say, this call is being recorded. The technology that sits under the covers was technology that this company was developing 20 something years ago. And so they hired me to take this product that now was ready to go to market and help them find their customers. And that's what I did. The hats that I learned to wear over the years with all the businesses I've had, and I've done everything from consumer packaged good products to restaurants, to sporting goods, to software development, and a lot more than that. But the hats that I learned I like to wear the best were those of customer relationships, sales, marketing, being able to help myself when it was my company or others when it was somebody else's company, identify their high value customers, targets, perhaps vendors, manufacturing sources, strategic relationships, whatever would help them grow, whether that be by customer acquisition, whether it be by revenue, whether it be positioning the company for an exit. All of those things I enjoyed a lot. Didn't like a lot of the under the covers management kind of stuff, financial, legal, accounting, hiring and firing and managing people. That was never my strong suit, so to speak. But dealing with customers, dealing with vendors, that I really liked. So I gained, because of the background of the companies, I had just sold a software company that I developed, a little communications product, which we don't need to go into, but it was a success. And I sold that company in 2000 and then got hired by this company in Georgia to help them bring their product to market. I was with them for about a year. And like many products, they go to the public and get introduced through industry events, trade shows, beyond the regular marketing that people might do. Today, of course, social media, the internet, you know, direct mail, perhaps. But back 20 years ago, you know, before really the internet and social media became really popular, trade shows and events at Las Vegas, New York, Atlanta, Dallas, you know, the major cities would bring together companies, whether they were in the painting business, the plumbing business, electrical supplies or telephones, whatever. They have their own industry event. And it goes, and that still happens today. And they all get together. And typically you get a lot of customers that do the same thing. And they go for the same customers and they compete with one another. And they also learn from one another and hopefully improve their products as a result of seeing what other people are doing. Imitation is the best form of flattery. I've always believed that. And if you see something that that resonates with you, that adds value, you know, you might very well incorporate that into your product or realize that your product isn't any good. And you may go work for the company that's making that better product. And that's that's what I've done on many an occasion. Because sometimes you have to realize, you know, what you do well and also what you're not doing well. And anyway, with that being said, one of the companies that was a direct competitor of the company I represented was a Russian company. Now, I'm not going to get into current local politics, but Russian people, like I think most people in the world, whether they're American or Swiss or German or Russian or Chinese, people are generally very good. I always start people at 100% and let them prove otherwise. And again, governments and politics aside, the people are generally very good to one another and to others outside of their cultures. generally. And so so we became friends, or I guess the expression is frenemies, because they were a competitor of mine. And after one of these trade show events, we'd go out for cocktails. And yes, stereotypically, those boys can drink their vodka. And so we'd have a couple of drinks. And on one occasion, I had just landed a very large account with a well-known American company, Motorola. And I sold this communication software, licensed it to them to build into their Motorola telephones. And while we were having cocktails, this company said to me, the people said, you know, Paul, we really can't understand it. We have the same technology that you do, and ours is much better, which they were correct. It was. And he says, but you landed the account. We did not. You know, why do you think that you made that deal where we could not? And I said, well, it's very simple. Very honestly, your technology is better than what we have. But I'm American and you are not. And what I meant by that was not insulting. It was not disrespectful. It was just basically saying that American people prefer to do business with people who understand their needs, their culture, and speak their language. That's very important. I always thought it was one of the shortcomings of the American education system that we don't stress languages as much as other countries do. You know, we kind of expect that's why they say the French don't like us, because we go over there and we expect everybody to be speaking English. Well, I kind of agree with that it's unfortunate that the American education system, I was thrown out of Spanish class, German class, and French class in my education because I never really got it. But that's not necessarily a reflection of my intelligence. It's a reflection of the education system and the fact that we don't stress foreign languages enough in the United States. And of course, we are a marketplace and a destination for people. So it's understandable that English is a language that other people want to learn. Just like today, it might be Chinese or French or something else. But anyway, that was basically my answer to them, is the only reason I closed that deal and you did not was because they liked talking with me. They felt I understood their needs better than you did, even though the product itself, because people, and this is something very important that I've learned over the years, people don't buy technology. They don't buy services. They don't buy products. They buy relationships. If somebody feels comfortable with you, and it's no different than if you go out to a restaurant or you hire a plumber or a lawyer, if you don't feel comfortable with that person, if you don't feel they have your interests at heart, if you can't build a relationship of trust, even if they don't want your products or services, just to become a trusted resource of that person, because if you can't satisfy their needs today, maybe they feel you are somebody who understands them enough to help them when there's something they need that I could lead them to that I don't provide at no profit or benefit to me, but just because I want to build the relationship. That's something that I've been able to do very well over the years, and I do it sincerely. And it's helped me and it's benefited me and my family. And I've done very well financially as a result of that. So that's my method of operation. That's a relationship, by the way. So that continued because they made me the proverbial offer I couldn't refuse and asked me to come work for them. That's the moral of this story. Sorry for my long-winded way of getting to it.
I love it.
But they hired me. And I loved their products because they did have a lot more than the company I was working for. It presented more opportunities for me. They had navigation system software. They had video. They had audio. They had all sorts of things beyond the products I was selling for this American company. And so what happened was I was with them for 12 years. Many of my accounts are very well-known names. The video you see in a Skype call, the audio you hear on any Apple device, the location technology that sits on the chips in a Samsung telephone. These were all products from this Russian company that were developed and I licensed to these American companies for the technology to improve their products and the features that they deliver to people who use their products. And it was a very successful relationship that lasted about 12 years to about 2010. at that point, I pretty much did everything I could do for this company. And help them actually exit one of their divisions where it was acquired by an American company. and I left them. And I also missed living at the coast. So my wife and I moved to North Carolina at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
No, you're fine.
So as a result of that, and now I developed a reputation of being able to take a foreign company's product and articulate its value to the American audience and identify its customers and its value and help those companies penetrate the American market with their product that was developed overseas. My first was when I moved to Wilmington, there was a company that just acquired rights to an Austrian baby bottle manufacturer. And they wanted to introduce this product to stores and retail and young mothers and things like that. It was a very innovative design of a baby bottle, different than what traditionally you might see on the store shelves. And so they hired me, and I helped that company grow to a point that it was recently acquired by somebody else. And that was a relationship that lasted a couple of years when I was approached by an Israeli company that had a media product they wanted me to launch in the United States. That turned out to be a horrible product. And I told them after doing my market research that I didn't think it would be successful. And that relationship pretty much died because I just didn't believe in the product. If I can't get passionate about something, I won't pursue it, whether it's working for a company or trying to do it myself. Then there was a Chinese headband headphone that was very good. And I helped that company get that into places like Walmart and other areas that they were looking to expand into the retail of their consumer packaged goods. That's a relationship that lasted to a point that it kind of became boring to me. And now a little bit of background. My wife and I weren't fortunate enough to have children. I married 30 years, and our children are the four-legged variety. We have dogs. And so we, like many people in the United States, spend a lot of money and a lot of attention on their pets. And we are no different. And I'm always searching for innovative things, whether it be a GPS dog collar or something interesting for the dogs, dog beds, whatever else dogs need. And so I found on the internet this Australian product, which was a self-service dog wash system. And it was a really interesting product. It was kind of like the old car wash, if you recall. You drove through and you took a wand and you sprayed your car with water, and then you sprayed it with soap, and then you dried it with towels. It was a self-service car wash, not the automated machines that we use today that we wash our cars, but it was a self-service car wash. So this machine was similar to that. It was $10 for 10 minutes. You put in a credit card or a $10 bill. You put your dog up on this platform, you sat there with your dog, stood there with your dog, and you sprayed it with water and rinsed them off. And you sprayed it with then very good quality shampoo and conditioner and flea and tick repellent. And then you dried it with built-in hair dryers. And in 10 minutes, your dog was wonderfully washed and dried. It was a big machine, it weighed about 800 pounds, and it was coming, and I approached the company, and I said, what are you doing in the United States? I've never seen anything like this. I think it's really cool. There'd be a market for it in pet stores and dog parks, car washes, anywhere people go with their dogs. I think this is a really cool device. And they were in business now for 5-7 years at the time, doing very well in Australia and a little bit in Europe, a little bit in the Middle East, which is markets they sold to. But they never wanted to come across the pond, so to speak, to the United States because it was expensive to transport the machine. And they just didn't know the United States market. So I approached them and I told them I was very interested in it. And I wanted to take that product to market. I actually would have bought the company, but they weren't interested in selling. They wanted me to work as a commissioned salesperson, a hired gun, so to speak. And I did that because I believed in the product. I helped it. I grew it in the first year or two. But then I identified the fact that if this is going to be successful and scale, it really needed to be manufactured here in the United States because it just cost too much to transport this by ship overseas or by air. And so I identified a U.S. manufacturer. They loved the product so much that they, in fact, did make an offer and bought the company. And that basically put me out of a job. So my dream and my five-year plan for the growth of this company was then put aside because they had their own sales force and everything else, and they didn't really need me. And so now there I was again, with another product that I helped launch and build. And I basically retired at that point. This was 4 years ago, and retired for probably the sixth time in my life. But I keep getting called back to things. And then, but this time I was very content. But I'm still surfing the internet for things all the time. And so once again, I was approached by a German company who had a vertical printing machine. I had never seen anything like it. It was kind of like an inkjet printer on steroids. It printed indoors, outdoors, on any wall, any vertical surface. It sprayed ink on it, dried, and then any kind of digital artwork could be applied to any wall, whether it be brick, wallboard, sheetrock, metal, tile, glass, whatever. And I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen, but I had never seen anything like it. And once again, they said they were coming to the United States and they asked me to represent them. I would have bought the company, but they didn't allow me to. They didn't, and they or even rights to the product. And they just wanted me again to be a commissioned salesperson. At that point in my life, I said, no, I'm not interested in that type of relationship. I like the product, but I'm not going to just go work for you. And so that conversation broke down. But in this case, I decided to do my homework. And I wanted to see, how come I've never seen anything like this product? Who else is doing this? So I did my research. And for about a year, I discovered that that there were only about four or five other manufacturers in the world that made this type of machine. All of them were in China or India. The originator of the technology was actually a business that had been around for about 14 years and about 500 customers, whereas this German company, which has had a quality product, it was in business for just a few years and only had a handful of customers, so it wasn't really field proven yet. And there were features that I learned as I started learning more about the industry and the market to decide whether this was something I really wanted to invest in, my time, my talent, and my treasure, the three things that I think are important to the success of any business or anything that somebody should do: time, talent, and treasure. Do you have the time to do something? Do you have the talent to be successful? And do you have the money to get you through the learning curve until you actually start making money for the company or for your product? So, and I had those three things for this product. And so we did our courtship, and they in fact did allow me to buy into the company and the rights to the product, where I support research and development. I saw features in the German product that were lacking, features in their product that they had, some other things I wanted to see, like a floor printer, a machine that does the same thing, but prints on floors instead of just walls, you know, that could put a logo on a basketball court or personalized parking space in a garage or something like that, a nice mosaic print on a tile of a foyer of a home. So we end with my assistance, we developed a floor printing machine, and I co-own three patents on the machine with the Chinese manufacturer. And most of the manufacturing of the machining is done in China, but we also add to it American-made parts on the electrical computer and other components of the machine that I have sourced and market here. So we do all the assembly. I've built a company that provides training, support, warranty, and some manufacturing as well, and here in the United States in Wilmington. And our product has a better resolution than the German product had. It had some other features that the German product did not have. And again, without going into the technical differences, I felt that I could take this product to market. And so, again, bought the company. I established marketing at a time. People thought, including my wife, that I was an idiot, because the time that I chose to do all this was in 2019. I got my first shipment of machines in December of 2019, and I launched my company in January of 2020, right when the pandemic started. And now, not only were people being laid off and being put out of work, but they were also not able to travel to see things. So there were no trade shows anymore to launch products like this and to show them. Nobody was coming to Wilmington or anywhere else to see something. And there were also no customers who had these machines. So it wasn't like buying a hamburger place or a pizza place or a plumbing shop or even being a lawyer or something. You had no reference point for a vertical printing machine. So there I was, but I was all in. And I will back up a little bit. Whenever I find something that I find interesting, I call into my wife and I say, hey, Maureen, come take a look at this product. Invariably, rather than see what I'm talking about, she normally cuts up my credit cards and changes the passwords on my bank account because she goes, here we go. Paul's going to invest in something crazy again. This time she saw this machine and she was all in as I was. And she said, Paul, if you think you could do something with it, let's go for it. So we did. So now here we are in 2020 with a product that nobody knows anything about. So whereas everybody was laying people off, I started hiring people. I started hiring the technical team to learn about these machines, how to use them, how to support them, how to break them apart and put them back together again. I hired a sales team. I hired my marketing team. That was actually the first thing I did was to determine who wants this. Is there a market for it? How much should we charge for it? And all of this, everything that goes into a company and its product and its customers. And so we spent 10 months just doing that. And it turned out that actually the COVID pandemic, while sadly what's happened as a result of it and the loss of lives and jobs for a lot of people, there was some good from it that people had the opportunity to rethink their lives. There they were at home saying, okay, I'm laid off or I'm working from home. Is this what I want to do? Do I want a different career? Do I want to go back to work for this company when I can go back to work for this company? Or do I want to do something totally different, like invest in a business of my own? So people were rethinking their lives in 2020 and are still doing that today. And so I kind of took advantage of that and really put a lot of effort and money into social media marketing by putting out videos and messaging people with images of what these machines could do and what the business opportunity would be. Because unlike the German company who actually competes with its customers and sells wall printing services, I just, as well as the machines, I just wanted to start businesses. I wanted to create new entrepreneurs who are willing to take the risk on a new innovative machine. And with our assistance and our support, would find a local market and be able to deliver beautiful wall art onto any wall and floor in their communities. We're not a franchise. We don't reach into our customers' pockets for royalties and revenue. We don't obligate them to call themselves the wall printer. They come up with their own name and brand, or they have an existing company, like they're in the painting business, or they're muralists or graphics designers or interior decorators. And they see this as something that can add revenue to their existing business. So we provide the machines. We service, support, train people on how to use them, and we help them be successful. Now, Andreas, let's fast forward 3 years. It's 2023. We now have 135 new businesses we've created with customers that have our machines. I'm very proud of the staff that I have. We built up to about 15 people on staff regularly, full-time, that provide these services of support and marketing. And that's where we are. It's a wonderful business. I love the product. I love the fact that it produces beautiful wall art reliably, inexpensively, and quickly onto people's walls, whether in homes, restaurants, schools, hospitals, medical offices, whatever. It's really up to our customers to go after their markets. We don't do their marketing for them. We do provide them with a lot of information and videos and images of things like that until they get their own success stories. But it's really their business. And all we do is we make sure the machines work for them day in and day out. That's my business. And that's where we are. And that's the journey of Paul Barron.
I'm like, you did it all in a nutshell. I love it. So the picture behind you, I have to ask, is that that's one?
Yeah. Because I've been looking at it. So my office staff, who's in rooms around me here, my office staff wasn't nice enough to give me, like I gave them, a window in their office. So I had to wall paint one. So yes, so that's a five, it's a 5 foot by 8 foot painting of, as you see, a window going out onto a pond with seagulls and a waterfall and all that stuff. That took us 2 hours to print that. It takes about $20 worth of ink. Ink costs 50 cents a square foot. Our customers typically charge $20, $30 or more per square foot to the services because they have to travel and everything else to bring the machines and set them up. But that takes 2 hours to print, $20 worth of ink. And you've done something that an artist could not do with the kind of precision and resolution that this has in at least 2 days, maybe even 2 weeks. And this isn't to say that we take the food off the table of artists. Many of our customers are muralists and artists whose business is really, and whose life, whose passion is to create art, not to spend days or weeks actually painting it onto a wall. If there's a machine that could do that reliably and quickly, they're happy to be around just creating new art for people and for themselves to sell. And so we actually compliment artists. We don't take the food off their table by doing something like this.
Yeah, I would just say that that actually helps. And I can see where it helps, because they can get really creative and be able to do more projects and make more money.
So that's our open dream for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, also people that open up their minds to the business opportunities and stuff. I did want to touch on when you was talking about your career and what an illustrious career you have had.
Not totally illustrious. There were its valleys as well as its peaks. So I don't want to mislead the audience to think that everything I've talked about was successful and that everything you do, because I did leave off. I started this journey in the year 2018, 2019. I'm 72 years old. So there was 40 years that preceded it that I owned my own companies and did things that some of which were successful, some of which were not.
Well, I did want to mention one of it turned into a not successful thing where you actually solved the problem of the other company. When you was just talking about when you was a consultant and you was looking at how to position
help the foreign company position itself
and then
in the
they
United
turn
States.
Around and not use you. Because they had their own, you know, sales team and things of that nature. Did you see that coming as far as like, you know, could you tell that that's the direction?
Not really. I was, to be very honest with you and your audience, I was very surprised because I created a business plan for the company and I was very successful in launching it here to the United States and identifying what the needs were for the company to scale and grow. But I wasn't surprised by it. I was disappointed, but not surprised. When you have lemons, try to make lemonade. So when I was basically put out of work, so I went and I leveraged the same experience that got me there by identifying products. But I just learned from that I wasn't going to work for anybody anymore, that if I was going to do it again, I was going to own the product and own the market. And so that's what I'm doing today.
So when you offered to buy some of the companies that you said you loved their products and they turned you down, do you think that was due to them recognizing the value that you would have brought and they didn't want to like give that up?
Or No. I think it's, I'll answer that two ways. I say no because, first of all, they think that their product has value, not that I didn't bring the value, but they thought that their product had enough value that, like many companies, never give up equity if you don't have to. So it was a smart decision on their part. If they had a very good, reliable product that they could reach their financial and customer goals without me. And so that's what made their decision not to take me in as an equity partner or to sell. Because they had their own business plan, just like I did for the dog wash, and they wanted to execute on it. They didn't want to give that to somebody else. So I respected that. While I would have just moved on and done something completely different or stayed retired, I loved the product so much that I started doing my homework, as I described to you and your audience earlier. The second part of that is that, as it turns out, they are today, through a distributor, they're marketing their product here in the United States. They're a competitor of ours. We've completely blown them out of the water because the product I have is, the short answer is we have a better product, more reliable, better resolution. All the things that I found deficient in that product, we've put into our product or was there already before I bought it. And so I'm very content with the business plan I had for my company, which I probably would have done for their company should they have hired me. But I'm very happy with the way things turned out. So with that said, that's what happened with this particular product. There were other instances in my past. I was in the restaurant business for 12 years. I had a very successful restaurant that I built in 1979. It is still open today, 44 years later. I am very proud of that fact. I sold out to my partner in 1990 after 12 years in the business, moved to Florida so I could play tennis every day. And my parents had moved to Florida, and I wanted to be closer to them as they were aging. And when I moved to Florida, I said, once again, like I've said many times in my life, what's Paul going to do when he grows up? So I said, well, I had a very successful restaurant in New York. I'm going to open a restaurant just like it here in Florida. Well, to make a long sorted story short, what I made in 12 years financially in 12 years in New York, I lost in 1 year in Florida to the point that I was driven into bankruptcy. And so that was one of my learning experiences, as I call them, that the path isn't always straight uphill. And so that and that actually was a pivot point in my life where I went back to my roots, which was mathematics. And I started working for a company, and I contributed to developing a little software product, and that became very successful. So anyway, things happen for a reason. You just have to, as the old saying, Andreas, it's not how many times you fall down, it's how many you get up. Well, that's true for business as well as life.
So I'm sure you run into a lot of different entrepreneurs now, and with your vast knowledge and history, what are like some of the two pieces of advice that you give them when they're starting their path?
Well, number one, if you're a true entrepreneur, by the definition, this isn't giving myself any credit, although I do think I fall into that category, mainly because I've been willing to take risks. Now, sometimes that's not a result, and I'm not going to say that I was very wealthy. I'm not. I grew up in a very modest family. I made everything that I have and lost everything that I had as well. Now we're on an upswing again. And so, you have to be willing to take a risk, or you need to have people who are as confident in you as you are in yourself, or the product or service that you're developing or want to launch or take to market, or business that you want to do. I don't care whether you're a hairstylist or a software developer. If you're passionate about it, they say, here's my formula for the ingredients for success. And I'll be honest with you, it's not my formula. I've been recently listening to a lot of YouTube videos and watching a lot of YouTube videos of Jimmy Buffett, which was a musician that I really loved over the years, and he recently passed away. And so there's been a lot of tributes to him online. And so I was listening to an interview that he had, and he probably is one of the purest entrepreneurs you can imagine. If you reach into his life, he died with a, everybody thinks of him as a musician, but he died with an empire of retail stores, hotels, resorts, music, retail items, around his Margaritaville logo, modem, whatever you want to call it. But he said in one of his interviews something that I truly believe and take to heart. He said, to be successful, here's what you need. You need 10% talent. You need 20% luck. You need 30% hard effort. And you need 40% passion. If you have those things in that order or in that kind of allocated quantity, the money will come, the customers will come, the partnerships will come, all of that will happen around you. And so I believe that those four elements, talent, luck, effort, and passion, are the ingredients to success. Now, that's not what's going to make you a good leader. That doesn't guarantee that your business or your product will be successful, because it does require other things like leadership and good people working for you or working with you. If it's not just a one man or one woman show that you're launching. So there are other things to be considered. But those four elements, I really appreciated hearing what he had to say, because I totally believe that that's the case.
So what's up? So what would be the other, any other piece of advice besides
people ask me all the time, what makes a good leader? I'd like to think that I am a good CEO or leader of a team or something like that. I like to think that I am. You know, you'd have to ask my employees to talk about that, and they may say otherwise. But I think I pay my people very well. Mm-hmm. I make sure that everybody shares in the success of the company. I think that's important, that everybody works as a team. But what makes a good leader, I've learned, is somebody who's smart enough to hire the best people to do the jobs that are needed, and then wise enough to back off and just let them do it. And so, you can't do everything, you know, that, you know, and even if you could, that doesn't mean you should do everything. Even though you could cook hamburgers, that doesn't mean your restaurant is going to be successful because you're at the stove when really you should be shopping for the right kind of chop meat or building the restaurant or dealing with the customers. Everything has many elements to it, many moving parts, even though you may be. And I always believe when I was in the restaurant business, I did tend bar, I did cook, I did wash dishes, I did wait tables. I wanted to learn those things because I wanted to learn about the business, even though I had a partner who really knew all that stuff, but I still was passionate about the business. That's the 40% part of what I described. And so I wanted to learn all about it. But eventually, I gravitated to what I did best, which was dealing with the vendors and the people and doing some of the bookkeeping for the restaurant and that and the buying of our products and things like that. But you have to find what you're good at and let the people who are better qualified to do those things do it.
And I love that. I 1,000% agree. What do you enjoy most, products or service?
Whatever makes money.
I love it. Whatever makes
money. I like finding out what people want that they don't have today, and is it something that I can deliver? If it's a product, like a headband, headphone, great. If it's a service, like what our customers provide to their customers. By me providing the product, the machine, they're providing the services. They're going to make a lot more than I make. The real high margin is in somebody painting this for somebody and charging $20 or $30 an hour to do that and getting back $800 for something like that and having about total $200 in labor and ink costs and everything else. So the real high margin is in that, not in the hardware of machines. But I'm doing okay by selling a lot of machines, so we're okay with that model. But ultimately, whether you want to go the service route or the product route, what are you passionate about? What have you learned there's a market for? What can you properly service and support yourself?
You sound like a true marketer. I love it.
That's the hat I prefer.
I love it. You know, I love being creative. I love doing marketing myself. What industry have you enjoyed the most so far?
The one I'm in at any particular time. whatever I'm doing, I think that's where I should be. And until proven otherwise by its success or its lesser success. And so today, I absolutely love what I'm doing. And the fact that I'm 72 years old, as I may have mentioned earlier, I don't have a lot of these runs left in me. My wife doesn't want me to do this anymore. I do like playing tennis, and I do like, even at my age, and if your audience has video, they'll see that I'm not your stereotypical body of a tennis player, or a swimmer, which are my two sports. And I love doing both of them. I swim a mile a day, at least five or 6 days a week. I play tennis 2 days a week because my legs aren't as good as they were, but I still am competitive. And those are things I like to do. But I'm really enjoying this business. It is successful by all measures. I'm helping my employees grow. My first employee, I'm looking to see if he's in his office so I don't talk too much about him behind his back, but because he might be able to hear this. He's 26 years old. My first house I bought when I was 24 years old was $25,000. He just bought a $335,000 house at the age of 26. Now, that said two things to me. Number one, I'm paying him too much. Number two, he's a real sharp kid who really knows how to save and spend money wisely. And in fact, it's the latter. He's just a really
awesome, though.
But the fact that I could be there while he could do that at his age, working for me and helping my company. He's my social media marketing manager, and he's done all the the video production and the imaging and mm-hmm. creating the Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, TikTok yeah. and all the posts we do. So I'm very proud of him and proud of the fact that I was able to provide that kind of foundation for his growth.
He's been doing a fantastic job. Because like I said, I've been going looking at videos and stuff, and I love it. Well, Paul, is there anything else that we didn't get to talk about that you want to talk about?
Well, like I said, there's 40 years I really didn't share with you, but we don't have to go through that now. I think you got the gist of it. Mm-hmm. And again, if people want to get in touch with me, LinkedIn, I'm always happy to connect with people, let them talk with me about their journey or their challenges, mm-hmm. whatever I can contribute. I do a lot of give back at the local University of North Carolina. I'm on mm-hmm. their Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. I'm very proud of the fact that my company and I was just selected for the 2023 Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which is an annual award given to one individual or company. Mm-hmm. And my company and I was selected this year. I'm very proud of that. And I participate as a mentor at the local university. They have a Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship where students, faculty, and community, people mm-hmm. who are launching their own business or thinking about a business, come to us with questions. Some people wear the hats of marketing like I do. Some people mm-hmm. wear the hats of financial or patents, legal, things like that. And we come together to help somebody launch or grow their companies. So that's something we do pro bono. That I get a lot of pleasure out of that. But if people want to connect with me, LinkedIn is the best way to do that. If there was something about the wall printer that they wanted to know about or learn about, please just go to our website. You spend 30 seconds on our website. You watch one of our videos. You'll get what we do. Mm-hmm. And you can always request information if it's something that you'd like to pursue as a business. And that's thewallprinter.com.
Well, Paul, I appreciate your time. Appreciate you, giving me the opportunity to even ask these questions and your insights to everything. So I wish you
thank much you, Andreas. I enjoyed the conversation and I appreciate you.
All right. Now, I got a couple of friends that I went to college with that still live in North Carolina. I'm definitely going to tell them to come your way and go and take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah. If anybody is in Wilmington, North Carolina, wants to come and visit with us, just give us a heads up and we'll be happy to show you around the factory and the showroom and how the machines work and all that. In fact, we kind of insist, although many people don't do that because of travel restrictions and other things these days and challenges, but mm-hmm. I guess about 70% of our customers come and visit with us because this is a new and innovative machine and they want to see that it's a real product and that it works and that mm-hmm. we give them the support that we promise that we give and meet the team. So we encourage people to come visit with us at any time.
All right. Well, everybody out there, y'all make sure y'all, if you need to, look up the wall printer, go to the website. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. And
Andreas,
as always,
thank you.
Welcome. And as always, y'all can download the app at bank.radioshow.com.
I have that as a testimonial. Yeah, and then you got some nice words.